So someone saw the Buddha walking down the path and thought, wow, is this a god? Is this some celestial being? He looked radiant. And they actually ask, who are you? And are you these things? He said, no, I am awake. So you can just check in right now and see, are you awake? Because this is exactly where we take refuge over and over again, you know, in this capacity to be awake, taking refuge in the teachings themselves as the foundation for being awake, and taking refuge in relationship with them, particularly when we have the support of spiritual friends of Sangha, you know, that we can be in practice together. We can see together what we might not be able to see alone. You might see something that I don't see, and I might see something you don't see. And it goes around and around and around. So the way I like to think about insight dialogue, it's a process of decentering the teacher.
Could you say that again?
It's a process of decentering the teacher. Right? Have you noticed you're all becoming, you've all become each other's teachers? That as you practice, it just happens naturally? Yeah, that's a really cool thing. And it just penetrates this tendency we have to externalize authority and think that awakening is out there in somebody else. When really the only place awakening can happen is right in here. And this particular body-mind, conditioned as it is. So, we've been practicing all through the week to kind of notice this, you know, to maintain a space for actually noticing what arises in the mind, and also to notice when it changes. All right. And indeed, our practice in dyads is concentration and mindfulness improve, you know, and we've got that reflection of another person who's holding the space, kind of stabilizing the space for seeing clearly. It's like Dharma squared. That's the way one of the teachers in New York, Bart Van Mellet. He has a group he calls Dharma Squared. It's exponential. All right? And that's pretty cool. But the thing about it being squared is that it can be intense. All right? The focus can be quite intense. As some of you noted yesterday, that intensity. And yet, what better place to cook than right here at BCBS, where we have the support of this hall has cooked so many of us for a long time. Yielding release, gradual awakening, you know, step by step. Over and over again, awakening is a practice. And we keep humbly coming and listening, attuning to change, allowing whatever is deluded in us to drop away. And we find we can actually surf those waves of change with some equanimity. And if we can't, in a particular moment, then we have the Sangha to kind of, and the teachers to help us kind of see what's happening. So I love the question and the reflections on the Satipatthana. I was so happy that that got brought in early and then again yesterday, because this noticing the rising and the vanishing, you know, is a real place of access to the Dhamma. Because as we listen, and you may notice this has happened in your diet over and over again, as we practice these factors of awakening, there is a space between things. There's a space around the thoughts. Sometimes we ring the bell and you just drop into emptiness. It's empty. Maybe just for a second or two, or maybe it's kind of spacious. Now that place can be a little scary sometimes. If it's, you know, when we actually get, the depth of that, it can be a little unnerving. In fact, I really appreciated the yogi yesterday who said, you know, I'm noticing that my mind is just not able to access the channel. Because if the stress response is activated, then all our energy is going towards that activation, right? And thank goodness it's that way. It gets us out of the way of harm, you know. So, you know, if there's a truck coming towards us, you definitely want to just automatically step aside. And so we can begin, though, to explore this territory, even when these feelings come up of, like, not being able to access the channel, or fear, or panic, or, you know, some of the things that were mentioned yesterday. It's like we can make a space for that, because that is the stress response just being activated, the conditioned mind. It's not, you know, the conditioned mind is suffering. It's not permanent, and it's not you. But we can get identified with our conditioned mind. Like, take doubt. Many of us struggle with doubt, you know. Doubt is definitely dukkha. It's impermanent. It's not there all the time. And it's not me. It's a condition. It rises and it passes away. And so we can begin to really, as we develop enough concentration and mindfulness to see thoughts and sensations and feelings kind of rise and pass away, then we have some confidence that, this is the path of release to actually notice these things. And if it gets too intense, then we just back off, get really grounded, and when we're ready, we can come back to it. You know, if the self gets scared, it's going to make something out of it. And then it can get scared of what it made out of it. And, you know, this is the way it works. And I love the yogi yesterday who said that they just put that part on the side of them and said, it's okay. You're welcome here. You know, the Buddha did that. The Buddha had these conversations with Mara all the time. You know, Mara would show up in the form of doubt, or, you know, it's fascinating in the suttas. I mean, the dialogues, the internal dialogues with Mara are quite familiar. If you start to read them, it's like, I know that one. You know, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are to say you're awakened? Yeah, I mean, it's just the territory. So welcome, Mara. Come. Come sit with me. Befriending these parts of ourselves that are scared, that get identified, that you know, go off the rails from time to time, lost in obsession. These are conditions. It's not personal. It's not me. It's not mine. It's impermanent. It will change. And if mindfulness and concentration is actually established, and there's this kind of container, a safe container for the inquiry, then we can begin to see that over and over again. The beauty of this practice is you keep changing dialogue partners, and you get to see each other doing it, whatever it is you're doing. And the heart just breaks open with compassion. You know? It just becomes so obvious that this is not personal. But it is part of being human. So, you know, the Buddha was really, the teachings are really just about being awake. They're not about some elevated state that you're gonna get to. Enlightenment is not a place. It's not an attainment. I think it's a practice. One of my favorite lines in the suttas is, "This samsara is without beginning or end. Beings wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving." It is enough to become, disenchanted with all formations, enough to become dispassionate towards them, enough to be liberated by them. Now, isn't that exactly what we're doing when we say attachment to breakfast is dukkha? You know, breakfast is impermanent. Breakfast is not myself. You know, we can begin actually to have quite a sense of humor about this. You know, everything that shows up can be welcomed. And what's freedom? When you are free from having to be perfect, that is pretty sweet. Not only is it sweet for you, but when everybody who's around you is free from having to be perfect, that's even sweeter. It's even better. Because then the, you know, love has an open feel. That's where metta, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity become boundless. You know, that's how in Mahayana practice we can make the vow that says, you know, suffering is endless. You know, beings are innumerable. The suffering of beings is innumerable. You know, I vow to, I can't remember it right now exactly, but I vow to
end it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Technically, it's sentient beings are numberless.
Yes.
I vow to save them.
I vow to
free them.
Free them all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So, So as we develop the sense of humor and we can have, and we see the space between thoughts, feelings, sensations, we get comfortable perhaps, or if not comfortable, you know, acquainted with the path. We can do that. We can kind of see the Four Noble Truths in action. You know, this is suffering. This is the cause of suffering. This is cessation. And this is the path to cessation. So suffering, stress can be comprehended. You know, the cause can be understood, can be abandoned, actually. The cause can be abandoned. Cessation can be realized. And the path can be walked. And that is the highest happiness. Walk in the path. With whomever, wherever you find yourself. Whatever condition, whatever place, whether it's at home with someone who has no interest in this path, that doesn't keep you from walking the path. You know, whether you're right in the midst of a frightening situation, you can walk the path. I injured my foot recently. It was a really quite a painful, severe injury. The practice was right there. It's right there. Mind as clear as a bell, riding the waves of that intensity. It doesn't matter where you are. So we practice in order to condition the mind towards the wholesome. The Buddha, his instructions to his own son, Rahula, were to notice, you know, anything he did, you know, in the beginning, in the middle, in the end, to notice, is it skillful? In a sense, is it wholesome? Is it liberative? If it's not, then abandon it. And if it is, cultivate it. So, the theme of the retreat, gratification, danger, escape, you know. We live in a time where gratification is rampant. As Nick said, you know, desire is being engineered for us through our interfaces with devices and a consumer-oriented world. So this capacity to know that the level of how vulnerable we are to that kind of manipulation, and to take responsibility for really discerning, is this wholesome? You know, how much is too much? And how am I going to live a life with some restraint? In fact, if I find it's too much, can I abandon it? You know, but also with some resiliency. Can I really have the inquiry? Because technology is not going to go away. Innovation is going to continue. It's wonderful. Who knows what good can come? And who knows what harm can come? And so we practice so we will know. And even what we know about it will keep changing. But to know our own vulnerability is a starting place. So that guideline, relax, pause, relax. As long as we're resisting or resenting pain, unpleasant, or falling into the pleasant in a habitual way, whatever habitual thoughts we have, you know, we're just on the cycle of samsara. So we have to really get to know the territory, allow ourselves to feel, several of you notice, wow, you mean I can feel there's a pathway here where I'm not avoiding pain, but I'm actually allowing the knowing of it. I'm taking an interest in it. What does it feel like in the body? How does it activate the mind? I'm beginning to allow mindfulness and concentration to grow right there with the actual experience. I'm not bypassing it. I'm noticing that I can be in radical relationship, radically present with what's here. This is the path. This is what the guideline pause, relax points towards. This radical presence with what's here. Conceptual bypasses. Thinking about things can be helpful, but it can also be a bypass. But sometimes, if you're thinking about something and the mind is really going to town on it, it's very useful to intentionally think about it. You know, to intentionally just take it to the nth degree. You know, magnify it. You know, until you can find a sense of humor in it. Yeah, you know, I just cannot believe I can't get to the hall on time. You know, I am just such a terrible yogi. Or people must really think I'm horrible. Whatever, I mean, you can choose anything. Yeah. Until you kind of see through it. It's like, I can't believe I fall asleep, you know, in the hall, sitting on my cushion, and before I know it, you know, there I go. You know, well, get interested. Don't be afraid to really have your experience and be curious about it. There's a sutta that we'll probably be working with some aspect of this morning, where Nick sent it to me last night and says, what do you think about this? And where the, is it the Buddha with Ananda?
Or it's Ananda with Tapusa, and then they both go to the Buddha.
Okay, great. And the Buddha basically is talking about renunciation, like letting go of things. And saying that, you know, before I was a noble one, my mind did not leap up at renunciation. But now that I see it does, it leaps up at it. It's like I can see that cultivating, letting go, cultivating release, of letting go of those, of doubt, of fear, of, you know, but not before you've had it and you really know it and you welcome it, make a place for it, befriend it, you know. But once you really get to know it and it's like an old friend, what happens? It usually, in the conversations the Buddha had with Mara, it just vanished. That internal dialogue can just vanish. Then you're on to the next thing. The next place to practice. So Greg did some writing recently that I really loved. And He called the Eightfold Path a detox program. It's very sweet. Yeah. We're practicing and living in such a way that we can kind of unbind from these very limiting habits and views and release can become a well-established fact. I am awake and I know it. So let's just sit for a minute and then I'll ring the bell and we'll make the transition.
The rain has stopped. So we can walk outside for a half hour and settle with all of those nuggets yeah, seeing what's needed and being wakeful to that sip of water, the release of all these moments, just knowing wakefulness moment by moment, step by step. And we'll meet back in the hall at 10:35. And let's put the hall back to its former self.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.